So anyway, it's been a quiet year on the island, our hometown set here on the edge of the San Francisco Bay. Climate continues to seesaw, with temps dropping all over the island and monster storms marching on past Chicago like the Hessian army. But no, the end of the world has come and gone last year, and this year everyone forgot the end of the world already happened. So we all just kept on living, except for Howard Campion, and nobody got raptured. The Farmer's Almanac predicted a cold one this year, and it looks like they really nailed it as all the Bostons go slip-sliding away on sheets of ice back east. Around here, even the customarily flip-flops and shorts-wearing San Franciscans have wrapped themselves up in woolies. Pastor Nyquist has sent inquiries up to Bear Lake, where he is from, so as to learn when everybody turned on their furnaces, not wanting to seem overly cushy down here in the land of the lotus eaters. So for a good while, the thinning congregation sat there in the pews, bundled up with hats and scarves, breathing out clouds of ice crystals during the sermon while singing Ein Festeberg ist unser Gott. Naturally, no one in Minnesota would cop to turning on the furnace until well after the first snowfall. They're all made of sturdy Viking stuff. If you're cold, just put on a sweater. What's wrong with all of you down there in California? Gone a little soft. Yeah, sure. This past year, the juggernaut of development plowed forward slowly but inexorably as the boatworks area, together with the factory along the estuary, finally got themselves demolished, leaving beady-eyed engineers to scamper around like so many Star Wars critters to take care of a century's worth of industrial solvents and heavy metals in the soil, soon to become someone's home. People finally figured out which drugstore will be situated on the old Ron Good dealership site, and as the holiday period rumbled forward to tip and crash in waves of advertising and eggnog, the steel frame buildings went up at last on the soggy concrete foundation pad which long had served to host the holiday ice skating rink. The quirky situation along McKay Avenue, which some backroom dealers imagined would pass without anyone noticing, acquired in fact so much publicity when people realized that land designed for park use had been mysteriously rezoned for residential, then quickly auctioned off without public comment, and the state's attorney general indicated it would step in to settle the dispute between the outraged East Bay Parks District and the huffy federal GSA. The VA finally looks to have settled where their planned columbarium will reside at the point after plans had the facility hopping about the region more like a field of jackrabbits than should a stately estate for the deceased. A VA columbarium is a fine idea for the point, as it preserves the historical military flavor of the place, and the long-term tenants are unlikely to contribute much to traffic and noise. Plans continue to be going forward for a height variance for the Park Street Bridge area, which you just know is related to some realtor's wet dreams taking shape in the form of architectural drawings locked away in a vault. The idea of raising the height limit over there seems improbable and likely to cause both congestion and unsightly blockage of views of things like the hills, the estuary, and of course, the sun. It is also a bit weird that somebody wants to build a grand six-story high entrance to a downtown that is barely four blocks long and one block wide. But developers want their way, and if there is a square inch unoccupied, there is something about them that wants to build, 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 despite the fact it will ruin things for just about everyone else. Developers are constructed that way. On the upside, this year saw some great improvements on the island that are sure to bolster property values and bring scads of visitors over to come spend money here quietly and leave expeditiously without a fuss after getting pulled over to contribute to the general fund by means of a traffic citation. For one, the fighter jet, symbol of West End High School, got remounted on its pedestal in front of the main building. For another, we got our very own Target big box store, which makes many people proud. During the America's Cup race, we hosted the Swedish team out at one of the old aircraft hangars on the former Navy base. They may not be Norwegians, but sufficiently Scandinavian and nearly good enough to mark us as worthy of international recognition. The fact they did not win against our own local Oracle Club made it all the better, for if they had, we would have had to live with the suspicion of aiding and abetting the enemy. Now, it is true that the Target is located right now on land surrounded by former Navy warehouses, and now consisting of great mountains of smashed concrete, rebar, fencing, shoveled earth, and weeds, all backdropped by the massive container cranes of the port, which must give the manager moments of despair when he comes to work sometimes, wondering just why the head office chose to place a store on the moon. Mr. Howitzer's firm has been doing well. He has a number of occupied units and quite a number of vacant commercial units about which he has little concern, as he handles the problem of the empties quite well by making the lessors pay higher rent to cover them. As for the residential units, he keeps some deliberately empty out of a concern that rent control might come into fashion at some point. His tenants at the household of Marlene and Andre on the bay side of the island continue to live an uncounted 15 to 16 head in that one-bedroom cottage, which is pretty much the way we are all headed, given the horrific rental situation which crossed the boundary from absurdly ridiculous to obscene some years ago. There in that cottage continue to live occasional Quentin, Javier, Jose, Xavier, Martini, Pa-Rump, Swan, Sarah, Tipitina, Jesus, Marcia, Little Adam, Rolf, Festus, the messenger hamster, and Snuffles the bum, who sometimes sleeps in the hole in the porch floorboards created during Javier's 50th birthday a while back. Marlene, Andre, and Little Adam get the bedroom. This space is shared with the dogs Bonkers, Wikiwup, and Johnny Cash. There is one makeshift outdoor privy. The little community gets by as best they can, surviving on food bank donations and the few odd jobs each brings in. Martini works as a sawboy for the Veriflow valve factory in Richmond. Occasional Quentin has his disability check. Swan works as a stripper for the Crazy Horse. And Tipitina rides the ferry into the city each day, where she is an administrative assistant in the small law office of Pettibone and Marlin up on the 36th floor of 101 California. Fortunately, the needs of the little group are modest. Save for Pa Rump's scooter, no one owns a vehicle, unless one counts the rusting hulk of Marcia's Volvo station wagon that now provides home to several species of flora and fauna out back next to the ironmongery garden. That Volvo, whose odometer had ceased operation around the 400,000-mile mark long ago, had served to transport Marcia and Bonkers, the dog, several years ago from an abusive husband in Passaic, New Jersey, to make it as far as the shores of the bay and no further. Marlene had hoped it would serve to transport the food bank turkey that Thanksgiving, but the thing sputtered and died within a week of arriving, no more to cross America or transport turkeys, leaving everyone very disappointed, but thereby earning Marcia full status as a household member with a berth among fellow souls sharing similar luck in life. For the holidays, the tree crew hauled home on a little red wagon a spindly, nearly naked thing with a huge trunk, and which clearly had not been gotten from any legal Christmas tree lot around here. It took quite a lot of used aluminum foil tinsel, keychain LED lights, laser pointers, condom wrappers, beer tab chains, and artfully arranged dryer lint to make the thing half presentable in its old washtub stand. Down the way, The old same place bar made it through the year and through the holidays pretty much as it always has, keeping to the old traditions as Park and Dawn see them. This often involves Park locating an outfit featuring a skimpy miniskirt for the lovely barmaid Susie, with the idea this will help secure somehow a decent and more or less permanent boyfriend for the girl. It certainly never failed to secure an eyeful for Park of Susie and a scolding from Dawn. Susie will have none of that romantic stuff, and during quiet periods, retreats behind the bar to read her anthropology text and all about the bonobo tribe with its curiously humanistic rituals and traditions of their own. From behind the bar, she observed the human rituals, the lines, the dances, and the happy unifications and the disappointments that departed the bar, entangled or not entangled, arm in arm with equanimity, before opening late into the evening her anthropology text. The bonobo forego the tedious courtship rituals found in other tribal groups, preferring to simply state the preference or offer, which is usually accepted with alacrity, as they enjoy mating at any time of day and any season for procreation or simply for the sheer joy of it. In many ways, she felt, the bonobo possess a superior culture to our own. Glancing out the window, just over the Guinness's Good For You sign, the crescent hook of the moon snaps up her soul and flings her across the heavens breathless to a rustic porch of clapboard and thyme, the house porch of the cosmos. There, old Gaia, with the white hair, snoozing on her wood-frame porch in a rocking chair, a coverlet quilt across her knees, the universe of stars, inclines her head slowly back to the loving gaze of her brother Phoebus Apollo as he canters in space with his gleaming chariot. As she turns her face ravined and mountainous, her shoulders clad in forests and deserts and vast savannas, turns from shadow to gathering light, tears train down to swell the rivers and lakes below, giving life to those forests and plains. Gaia's tears are the sorrow of the world. She weeps for all those who still do not understand that when all the trees have been cut down, when all the animals have been killed, when all the waters are polluted, when all the air is unsafe to breathe, only then you will discover you cannot eat money. So as Gaia's face turns back to the sun, the world warms up, nights become shorter, and the days lengthen as we return to that golden summer equinox in a vision of golden hillsides, meadow bees, and pomegranates. Quite suddenly, someone's call for a shandy gaff snaps the girl back to the old same place bar, and Susie is sitting behind the bar in the clean, well-lighted place again, and then it is back to work. Outside, anyone passing by would see only a lovely girl close up a book, put it away, and go about her business, a radiant light soaking the cold air outside, a chatter and a clatter within. Officer Omidhan's Crown Vic prowls past the place, goes down to Benton, turns right looking for prowlers of another kind, turns left to head up Buena Vista past the old empty brick loading docks and the weedy rail bed of the cannery. He parks at the cutout where big rigs used to idle before entering the gates of the place that briefly was a staging point during the last World War for transporting small arms. Now all was silent in that blocks-long fortress of brick memory, and the rails have not sung their songs for many years, now sighing with wind-stirred, ghostly reeds. In that spot, Officer Omidhan sips his styrofoam coffee with the lights off, watching for red light runners, dodgers, and drunks, passing the last few hours of 2013 with meditations of blue and shield. With the schools closed, Miss Morales, now Mrs. Sanchez, has been spending her time the way most school teachers do on their days off. Writing up new lesson plans, mending torn textbook covers, purchasing supplies the district fails to provide, and catching up with former pupils of hers at Longfellow and Encinal. She has seen a number of generations come and go, from Edison, go Otters, to Longfellow and the home of the Jets High School. When you're a Jet all the way. So there is a fair amount of catching up to do. The troubled Karen has managed to stay in college after finding a group of goth kids just like her, And so one potential human ark remained on her trajectory up and out of the small town corrosion that nearly destroyed her. Some others, not so lucky. As a teacher, you can never take full credit for the failures or the successes. You do your best to be there for them. Some fail. Her friend Sharon, the crisis nurse practitioner at the Creek Psychiatric Crisis Center, sometimes would burst into tears on the phone saying, I lost him, about some casualty of the 8.5 million metropolis that embraced, sometimes roughly, the tiny little island city. But then she worked over in Oaktown, where life is a waiting game for many. Because the island has no real mental health services, she saw many neighbors on the brink drop in there. I hate this place, she would say. Why did they not case manage him when I asked? I should move away tomorrow. Well, you would like St. Paul, said Ms. Morales, who had visited only one other place in the United States, other than the Bay Area, since coming to this country from the Philippines. Oh, heck no, too cold in the winter. I would rather go south, San Luis Obispo, maybe. We would miss you, Ms. Morales said. She knew that Sharon would never move. The sick little island, as she called it, needed her too much. And so, thinking of her friend, the Filipina lights a candle and says a prayer on the last night of the year 2013. Father Deniluk paced in his chambers before going over to the rectory for the traditional annual nightcap he enjoyed with Pastor Nyquist, who seems genuinely happy as Sister Profundity lets this Lutheran into the rectory annex, where the fireplace is already burning bright. It has been the habit of the two friends to have this forbidden meeting each year. As Pastor Nyquist put it, you and I, we have made a separate peace. Indeed, the Lutheran pastor enjoyed the high quality of spirits kept by the Catholic priest in the larder, and the Catholic priest had long enjoyed the superior singing skills of the Lutheran congregation as loners during the Christmas pageant and Easter. The Lutheran commented, you look troubled. Ah, the Mendoza family would not hear of any help. And now Jorge has gone off to San Quentin on assault with a deadly weapon, on top of a robbery charge. Yasher, I heard about that one, Nyquist said. Afraid I've lost him, said the priest. The Lutheran commented that one cannot save everyone, inviting a distracting evening of debate. And as per usual, the social evening ended the same way each year. Sister Profundity came in after midnight to remove the brandy glasses and to tuck blankets about both men, each snoring loudly in their respective armchairs before the fire. In the offices of Island Life, the editor stands at the window, cigar clenched firmly in jaw and arms clasped behind like Admiral Horatio at the bow. Now all the year's issues have been put to bed, and all the staff gone home to spend these remaining hours with their families, their friends, their loved ones. As for the editor, he remains to put things to rights, tidy up the place a bit. To this island, all are welcome, and all are invited without hesitation, especially for the lost, the lonely, the forlorn, the beaten, and the bereft. For this island is a place where truth, justice, and beauty, unlike any other supposedly real island, are the norms. The editor does all for company. For a brief moment, he wished for the company of the musician Denby, then thought better of it. That man was too morose. And so, as the final minutes of 2013 ticked away, two men of opposite faiths snoozed together in their easy chairs at the hearth of the rectory of Our Lady of Incessant Complaint. A peace officer sipped his coffee in a place surrounded by ghosts. A sympathetic friend lit a candle for another in the middle of the night. And the editor poured himself a double dose of Glenfiddich scotch on the rocks. At Marlene and Andre's household on Shoreline, all 16 souls who called that place home lay asleep in, on, under, and around their berths. As the night extended itself languorously with a purring stretch, the ragged and battered Christmas tree glimmered in its washtub. Deep into the night, as snores and sleeping rustles filled the cottage, a small marsupial snout emerged from a hole in its trunk, followed by a bulbous form that lumbered quietly across the bodies wrapped in sleeping bags, over the coffee table that housed occasional Quentin, and prowled along the floorboards looking for an escape from this madness without success. The opossum sat and wept quietly when no egress was to be found, before it grabbed a macaroon someone had hung from the tree, and there sat on its haunches to eat it, as the crescent moon watched through the window. The animal then crawled back into the washtub and into its hole, and curled up there to sleep with the others of that dysfunctional family. That's the way it is on the island. Have a great year.